This is Line Break, where we deconstruct poetry written by young writers and discuss the inspiration and intention behind their poems. Take a pause and enjoy the line breaks. Here's episode 13.
Go ahead when you're ready.
I was never any good with writing beautiful things, so I have to resort to painting tragedies. I was also never any good with watercolors. My hair is growing long, and I wonder if this is the end of the world. The tall pine trees growing outside of my house beg to differ. They have seen the end of the world many times, and zero out of those times has actually ended. I thank them, and I go on my way. Writing is so hard sometimes. I sit and think, and yet not a single beautiful thing can pass from my pen. Perhaps they were taken up by the flowers outside. Maybe poetry is what nature needs to grow, and they've been taking all they need from my body as I lie in the midday sun. I would have been happy to share. I am not sad. I am simply resigned. I've been inside for 5 weeks, but it does not feel like a lifetime. In fact, it feels like a terrifyingly short moment. I wonder if the rest of my life will pass me by like this in short moments that I can half remember. The sun tells me that I do not need to be afraid, but the moon tells me that I do. I sit under both of them and wonder which is telling the truth. I have not wanted to go anywhere more than I want to go to the grocery store and buy myself some cookies and maybe chocolate milk. People are kind to each other, and I am only learning of it now. People are kind, and we stay 6 feet apart, looking at each other as though if we try hard enough, we can transmit an apology through our eyes for not being able to come closer.
Wow, thank you so much.
Thank you.
Such a beautiful poem, and it's the kind that, as a writer, just makes me so, like, satisfied with the way that you word things and, like, use the language. It's just so cool.
Thank you so much. Yeah, I've been trying to read a lot and trying to shift my writing style a lot, too, I find, over quarantine. We have a lot of time, so I've been looking at a lot of classics that I didn't have time to before.
Mm-hmm. What books have you been reading?
So I've been reading some Walt Whitman. I've been kind of making profiles of all of these really great authors. And, you know, there's a reason they're great. So I try to read them and try to kind of imitate their writing.
Yeah, Walt Whitman is really great. I haven't read that many of his poems, though. I think that if I've read, like, classic poems, then they're very specific ones, you know, like,
yeah.
E. Cummings, I've read a lot of his stuff, but not a lot of, like, Robert Frost.
Yeah, like, I find that's a lot of, like, especially now, there's a lot of a gap in our knowledge about, you know, classical poets, and in a large part because I think a lot of people are intimidated, because when you think of classical poetry, you think it's a very closed circle of people, you know, and I don't think we have to be intimidated by classical poetry. It's a really beautiful thing, you know, you read it, and a lot of the reason I got into it is because I watched Dead Poets Society.
Oh my gosh, I saw that. It is the best. I was crying at the end. It was great.
Me too. It was, and so I watched that, and I was like, you know, I don't know enough about poetry's history itself, and so, like, I feel like you can't expect to be good at something if you don't know where it started. And so kind of reading the stuff that was made and kind of incorporating some of that structure in your own poems can be really great.
Yeah, for sure. What was your inspiration for this poem?
I guess just quarantine, and I've been feeling very, like, it sucks, but at the same time it doesn't suck as much as I maybe thought it would. There's that feeling of, like, oh my god, how is this real, or whatever, but there's also this feeling of, like, having more time to appreciate everything that you actually, you know, you never had time to, because, I mean, I was in school, and I didn't have any time at all, you know, with sports and clubs and whatever, and I usually got back after dark. So, you know, just to be able to sit out in the afternoon on the lawn or something.
It's very interesting for me too. Like you said in the poem that at the end that people are kind and we stay 6 feet apart looking at each other as though if we try hard enough, we can transmit an apology through our eyes for not being able to come closer. that's the thing that's so dystopian to me, is that, you know, when you go out, you see people with these masks and you can only see their eyes. So you're trying to communicate, like, I'm sorry, or just hello, or like trying to connect in some way, even though you can't see, like, if they're smiling or not.
Yeah, and I think that's what's become, you know, the new normal. I haven't been anywhere besides my house because my parents prefer I don't go, like, grocery shopping and stuff like that, just because of the risk involved. Now, Vermont's a lot safer than a lot of other places, thankfully. Mm-hmm. But so I just, you know, I haven't seen people. And so that's a lot of what's very jarring, is that, mm-hmm. you know, I'm lucky I'm not that much of an extrovert. But mm-hmm. even then, you kind of miss that sense of normalcy.
Yeah. Where,
you know, like, touching people was a normal thing, mm-hmm. you know, like somebody like brushing shoulders with you in the grocery store, that was normal, and now it's just not anywhere.
Yeah, and it felt like it happened very, very fast. Like, I remember I was just saying this actually yesterday, that I was sick at the end of February, like right on the cusp of when we started getting cases in the United States, and then it felt like the next week we were like getting as much toilet paper as we could.
Yeah,
it was so crazy.
There was definitely not a transitional period.
Yeah, it wasn't like, okay, we've got maybe a few weeks to prepare. It was just like overnight, get as many supplies as you can and like don't leave the house.
Yeah, and I mean, I remember I was watching a press conference with Phil Scott and March something, I don't remember. He said, we're not going to close schools. That was Saturday. And Sunday, a press release came out that schools had 3 days to close. And I didn't go that Monday because my parents were like, you know what, you can just stay at home, maybe go like Tuesday or Wednesday if you need to pick up work. And then they decided schools can't be open Tuesday or Wednesday either, you know? Mm-hmm. So there really wasn't a transition period. It all just shut down very, very, very fast.
Yeah, and you know, I say this in every episode, but I'm homeschooled. So I haven't had that, like, you're not going to school anymore kind of thing. But I mean, I still, you know, I would get together with people to record podcast episodes or to write this musical that I'm working on with a bunch of other people, or just hang out with my friend at the mall or on Church Street. So like, I would be doing things every weekend and babysitting too. I'd be babysitting twice a week. So I had a lot going on. And then suddenly it's just like, nope, no more. That's it. You're done. So it was very, very weird.
Yeah.
But I feel like I'm sort of getting used to it now.
Yeah, I mean, I've definitely come to realize that online schooling is actually, like, really, really nice. So that's you know, that's where I'm at right now. But, you know, it was strange because, I mean, when you think about it, I spent more time at school than I did with my family. Mm-hmm. So, like, in a combination of sports and clubs, like, I got there earlier than school actually started because I had clubs in the morning, too, mm-hmm. you know, and so just that sudden removal was very, and, you know, like, you almost don't process it,
mm-hmm.
you know, like, it still feels like it hasn't quite hit what is happening.
Yeah, and this reminds another part of your poem. I'm not sad, I am simply resigned, which reminds me of this other poem, which is Dirge Without Music by Edna St. Vincent Millay, which is sort of similar to this poem. It's like there's a difficult situation and you could be angry or really upset and just like completely shut yourself down, but you can also just, you know, accept that it's beyond your control and it's a bad situation, but you can't really change it in any way.
Yeah, and you know, I kind of read that because I've been feeling very numb almost, you know, because it's just like, you know, I sit here and, you know, what am I going to do? It's not like,
mm-hmm.
you know, I recognize that it's for people's safety. And because of that reason, I'm not sad. I'm not like, yeah. I'm not like devastated over the fact that I can't go to school anymore, you know? But, you know, it's a little bit, it's a loss, but I just haven't been, I guess, seeing it as a big of a loss as maybe other people have.
Yeah, and I think that there are definitely, like, when I get sad about it because, like, oh, I should be doing, I don't know, driver's ed right now, I should be getting my license, I should be going to a summer camp and all these other things. But then I'm like, well, There are so many people who have it way worse than I do. And it's not just me. There are so many people going through this. And it's like, it's the weirdest thing to connect with other people over. It's so dystopian that, like, there has to be a pandemic for us to connect. But, like, it really is transcending all of our differences and just bringing people together to this, like, understanding that our individual situations are pretty bad, but we're doing it together.
It's just that this whole situation, it's just becoming a new normal. You know, like, everything at some point will become normal if you do it enough. So it's just, you know, at this point, it's not as big of a deal anymore, I feel like, you know. You stay inside. I miss, like, normal things, but, it, you know, what can we do now? And so you just kind of have to accept it.
And I think that I don't really even realize that we're quarantined unless I think to myself, we're quarantined, you know?
Because
I can get so busy with, like, finishing my school classes and recording podcast episodes and talking to my friends. And then sometimes I'll just be like, oh my gosh, we're quarantined. Like, I can't go to the mall or I can't go to Starbucks or something. It's, like, just kind of jarring to remember because I've definitely forgotten about it. And, you know, I said this before, but in the same way, it's like, I don't actively think to myself that I'm a writer, you know? It just hits me sometimes, like, oh, I'm a writer. I write things.
Yeah, I guess I don't think of myself as a writer. I always think it sounds a bit, like, dramatic when you say it like that. Like, oh, I'm a writer. Like, I'm a poet. Like,
I'm a poet. It's so pretentious.
Like, I guess other people might view me as that, but I don't. Myself.
Yeah.
It's kind of weird to hear that from people. You know, like, yeah. Oh, she's a writer. I'm like, no, I'm not. I just write.
Yeah. How did you first get into writing?
I've been writing for, like, a long time. Like, I feel like if you read, you're gonna write at some point. It's not like a, it's kind of like a, like, if you read, you'll try to write. Because you try to imitate what you read and what you enjoy. At any point, anyway. It's like most people who watch sports usually play the sport themselves or have had some experience with it. And so I've just, you know, I've been reading all my life, so I've been writing all my life. I only really got into poetry when, like, I joined Young Writers Project specifically. And, you know, I feel like it's always that thing where you look back at your old writing and you're like, oh my God.
Yeah.
Did I write that? Like, oh no. That's part of, like, the whole growth thing, you know, as a writer you always look back and you're like, oh my God, I can't believe I wrote that.
Yeah,
but it helps to know that everybody does that, you know.
Yeah, and you have to start somewhere. Yeah, I've read a lot of my poems and I'm like, whoa, I can't believe I wrote that, or like, whoa, I can't believe I let other people read that.
Yeah, and it helps on Young Writers that it's really anonymous, so
yeah,
even if you wrote something that you thought was trash, nobody's gonna know who it actually is. Nobody's nobody's seen your face. It's fine.
But it's also great because you can get feedback. You know, people can tell you, like, what you need to change or what's working, or hey, I liked this.
And I think a lot of what's happened to me is that I used to post, like, a lot of my writing because I just wanted to get as much of it out there as I could. But now I'm just realizing that, like, I don't need to do that. So I write a lot still. It's just that the amount that I'm putting on the site or whatever I'm putting out is a lot less because I want to put out the best of what I do and not just everything I do. Mm-hmm. Like, it's about quality, not quantity thing.
Yeah. Yeah, I was actually just talking to my friend about that. It's funny. I can't remember how it came up, but I'm pretty sure, oh yeah, there's this question that he said, about quality and quantity. Would you rather have one really, really sweet, amazing strawberry or a bunch of, like, not so great strawberries?
The one, I think.
Yeah. Or
maybe a bunch of them because I'm, like, a really hungry person. Like, one just wouldn't be.
Yeah, well, I said if it's just for me, I would have one big strawberry, but if I'm with a whole group, I would pick all of the not-so-good ones because then we would at least have one. Even if it's not good, everyone would have one.
Strawberry quality is also very questionable.
I know, right? But you know what's really weird is that fresh strawberries that you, like, pick yourself are so much better than the kind you get in a container.
They are. It's crazy.
So, back to writing. What do you think influences your writing the most?
Oh, that's a good question. Probably what I've read, like, recently. I change my life goals regularly based on what book/movie I've read. So, you know, it's really volatile that way.
Like, I want to be a reporter one day, and then I want to be, like, an astrophysicist the next. So, it's yeah, I would really say what I've read. And a lot, honestly, you know, a thing I find helpful for poetry inspiration is just going on like YouTube and watching slam poetry videos. Yeah. Like, I'll do that for hours, and you know, because once you really start listening to poetry, then you've kind of got it, and you can write in that rhythm and in that way that you maybe wouldn't be able to write otherwise. And I try to make a practice of it. I try to you know, like, every night before bed, even if I don't feel like writing, I'll just write something. I'll force myself to write something, just because, you know, if you make a habit of it, it's a lot easier to actually start writing randomly or wherever you want to, you know?
Yeah, yeah. Do you ever write short stories or novels?
I have recently written kind of, like, a short story or, you know, something like that. But I think I have a lot of trouble with, like, novels because of the fact that there has to be, like, a very planned arching idea. And with poetry, you can just put something there. Yeah, and it doesn't necessarily have to be a plot, you know?
Yeah, I agree. That's why I struggle with essays, too, is that my teacher's like, you have to have an outline, and then you have to know each topic sentence and stuff. It's like, no, I just want to throw my ideas on the paper.
Yeah, and, like, poetry is organic. Like, you don't force it. You can't plan it. If you try to plan poetry, it goes really badly, in my experience. Yeah. And novels, you can't just, like, aimlessly write a novel, because in the end, no one's going to want to read that, because it doesn't really have a plot. So poetry is a lot easier for me, and something I think I prefer.
Yeah, I think that I just lose motivation more when I'm writing, like, short stories or novels than I do when I'm writing poetry, because when I'm writing poetry, like, I can make it abstract and I don't have to make it about the specific thing. But when, you know, you're writing a short story or a novel, you have to have a sequence of events and, like, a cause and effect and action reaction kind of thing. But with poetry, it's just, like, thought ending, you know?
Yeah, definitely. I really get that. And novels have just never gone well for me. They just never really worked out. And I really admire people who can do that, though.
And I read a lot. I've read so many books. It's crazy. And it's just really interesting to me, like, the really good books where it's like, I don't even know how someone could come up with this, you know, and, like, stay motivated to see it through the end. Because because, like, when I read a good book and it inspires me, then I'm like, okay, I'm going to start a book. I'm going to write something that's really amazing. And then I get, like, a page in and I'm like, I can't do this anymore. I can't do it.
Yeah, and I've been, some of the books I've been reading, let's see. I mean, I read The Secret History by Donna Tartt.
Mm-hmm.
And a really, really good book. Author is really good, too. Like, it's a very, very clever novel because it is about a terrible thing. It's about a murder at its core, and what the events that lead up to these group of people murdering somebody. But it's also very philosophical, and it makes you think, which I think the best books often do. You know, you read a lot of books, but the ones that actually stick with you are the ones that make you think. Like, a lot of Paulo Coelho's novels, like The Alchemist, you know, they all inspire you and make you think about things. And they don't just, it's not just a story. It pushes a moral to you without being overbearing about it.
Yes. And that's what sort of overwhelms me when I'm writing, is that I feel like I have this huge, big responsibility as a writer to, like, in a way, change someone's life when they read the book, you know? And so that's sometimes really overwhelming. Like, how am I going to make this, you know, important enough for someone to really be touched by it? But I mean, I think that just like poetry, you have to start somewhere. So eventually I'm going to have to start with my first like somewhat of a book, and then I can move on to writing better book, and you know, just like actually doing it, you know, and not just saying like, I will someday, or that's something I can do tomorrow, like actually, you know, writing.
And you know, that's another thing I think is really interesting, because you tell a lot of people you write, even if you tell them you write poetry, there's this assumption that your end goal is to eventually write a book.
Oh, yes.
Which isn't true for a lot of people. Like, that doesn't have to be the end goal for all of us to write a novel. Poetry and novels are very, very different things, and you might not be good at both of them. I guess we just have to start valuing poetry more as something standalone itself, instead of just lumping it together with, oh, you know, like, long writing or short stories, you know, like, these are very, very different things.
And a lot of times when you say that you write poetry or you're just a writer, people are like, oh, as a hobby, that's great. It's like, no, it's not a hobby. Like, this is something I want to really pursue my entire life.
Yeah, I mean, I guess it comes hand in hand with how we think people are smart when they really like science or math. You never hear people telling artistic people that they're really smart.
Yeah.
And that is the case. I mean, artistic people are really smart, but in a different way than people who like math and science are smart. And I think we don't recognize that, because a lot of people think, you know, anyone can be good at just writing. Special, everybody can write. I mean, everybody can do basic math. Not a lot of people are really good at it. Something we kind of have to change as a culture is that we're valuing a lot of STEM things, I guess, more than other humanities and stuff like that, when really they're just as valuable. I mean, again, from the Dead Poets Society, where he says, you know, math and science, these are things that allow us to live, but poetry and love, these are the things that we live for. And I think that's really true, and we have to, you know, kind of come to respect that, as we're really brushing aside a lot of people who have a lot of talent.
Yeah, I completely agree. It's very, very true. So, back to your poem for a second. Another thing that you said that I really, really liked was, the sun tells me that I do not need to be afraid, but the moon tells me that I do. I sit under both of them and wonder which is telling the truth. And I got chills when I read this, because it's a little haunting, you know, like the moon in the darkness telling you that you need to be afraid, but the sun saying that, no, it's okay, you can just be happy and stuff, but like, one of them is lying, so, you know, who's telling the truth? Do you need to be afraid, or do you not have to be afraid?
I mean, yeah, I think in a way, every kind of chunk of this poem could be another poem.
That's what I wrote on my notes.
I think I'm going to explore that, especially that sentence that you talked about, where, I mean, I don't necessarily equate the sun with goodness, you know, or light or stuff like that. I just, there seem to be like two narratives telling us something, and some people are saying it's going to be okay, and some people are like, well, no, it's not going to be okay, but you know, that's just how it is. And so this gets kind of overwhelming, I think, after a while. I've stopped watching the news and stuff like that, but
me too.
I think that line specifically, I do really like it. But you know, when you really think about it, you don't know who to trust. You know, do you trust the sun or the moon? Sun melted off Icarus's wings, but the moon is dark and scary, you know, like it's a question of facts, I think, and who's actually saying things that maybe the people who are saying that it's not going to be okay are kind of scary, but in the end, maybe they have the most facts. Maybe they're the ones who are most looking out for us, because they're preparing us for the fact that maybe it's not going to go back to normal, but you know, eventually we'll reach some semblance of okay, you know?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I think it's really, really amazing. And it also reminded me of oracle cards, because, you know, the sun and the moon are a big kind of like oracle thing. And I've been watching these tarot card readings on YouTube lately. I've watched so many of them. And it's so crazy, because every single one that I watch gives me like the same reading, and it matches up with exactly everything that's going on in my life right now. And it's just so weird to me that like it can be so connected. Just to like YouTube videos that I randomly click from like a year ago, and it's like this is what's happening in my life right now, and it's so specific, and it's, like, just so cool.
Yeah, I mean, I'm not a very belief person.
Yeah.
You know, I don't have a lot of, like, I don't know what it is about organized beliefs, but they just don't, I don't really fit well with them, but I am a very science minded person, I guess, and I really believe in science, and so, you know, the sun and the moon fascinate me, because, like, why wouldn't you be fascinated by the sun? It's a star, and the moon, well, the fact that it's there is kind of weird, and so, like, I think, but just as symbols, they're so powerful, because they're seen as exact opposites, and the symbolism of the sun and the moon in mythology goes way, way back, and I think
you can use that for a lot. And, like, feminine and masculine energy, too. It's very interesting. So, what overall meaning of this poem do you think people should take away?
I mean, I usually like people to take away their own meanings, because I think, you know, at the end of the day, poetry is not for to heal the writer, it's to heal the person who reads it. And so I would encourage people to take any meaning that they need out of it, or that they want out of it. If you really need to hear that it's going to be okay right now, you can take that meaning out of this poem. And if you need to hear that people are kind right now, you can take that meaning out of this poem. But if you need to hear something different, like if you need to hear maybe it's not going to be okay, but we're going to get through it, then, you know, just take that. And, like, it's not for me to decide in a lot of ways what people are going to get from this poem. I just want them to get whatever they need from it.
And a somewhat related question, they're kind of different, but what overall meaning do you like to take away from this?
Okay. I like to think that this is just about an experience in general, and maybe a day of my life and a day of my thoughts and what I've just experienced in a small amount of time. And I like to look at it as sort of like a time capsule almost. And I like to think that it's saying to me that things can get better. They might not, but they can. And so you just have to make the most of what's happening right now and kind of, you know, write and read and do whatever you wanted to do for a while, but you never could. And yeah.
Yeah, that's great. I think that the meaning that you want other people to take away from your poem and the meaning that you take away differs for sure, because some of my poems where I'm writing about something really personal and then I try to disguise it with a metaphor, I think that, you know, firstly, you can always tell what I'm actually talking about. And secondly, I definitely take away a much more personal meaning from it.
A weird thing about my poetry is that a lot of the stuff that I like the least is what other people like the most.
Yeah, yeah.
So I've kind of learned to just let it, I mean, I guess other people get a different message, and that's why they like it the most. So I just kind of let other people think what they want to think about it, or think what the meaning is, and so that they can enjoy it, because I've learned that a lot of the time what I like the least is what other people like the most. So you know what? I might as well just let them think whatever they're going to think about it.
Yeah.
Like, I really hated to all the people who hate Muslims. Like, I just genuinely hated that poem. I thought it was terrible. I thought it was awfully written in almost every way. And then people loved it. And I was like, wow, go ahead, I guess. So I think that's a lesson that you never know what other people are going to see in your poetry.
Yeah, for sure. You know, a lot of my neighbors read my poetry in the newspaper, and it's weird to me to picture them reading it and picturing, like, what meaning do they take from this poem, and, like, how does it, you know, resonate with them. It's different for me as a teenager writing poetry and then someone in their 70s or 80s reading a poem.
Yeah, I mean, I always feel rather silly when I think about that, because I'm just, like, a teenager writing poetry, which is a cliche.
I know, right? It's, but like,
I don't like to think about it.
I'm like, I know, okay, right?
I'm just gonna write what I'm gonna write.
I feel like if, you know, coming back to what we said earlier, if I ever say that I'm a poet and I write poetry, people automatically, like, picture me wearing a fedora and, like, Brooklyn drinking some really pretentious coffee drink. And it's like, that's very much a stereotype.
You know, I've just learned to embrace the stereotype. I think being exactly what people imagine you are is really fun. And so, you know, I've just kind of over quarantine, I've thrown myself into just being the complete poetry nerd that I am, you know, and you know, wearing a lot of, like, dramatic button-up shirts, and, you know, I for God's sake, I have math socks on right now. Like, I, there are equations ran on my socks. Like, I have become the stereotype, and I'm kind of proud of it. Like, you know what? I might as well, if I like something this much. You know, I think a lot of people dismiss teenage girls, especially.
Oh, yeah.
Whenever they're passionate about anything. I mean, when you look at, for example, the music industry, and you think about really, like, insanely popular artists, like, all of them, you take One Direction, Billie Eilish, Ariana Grande. These people who are, like, you know, everybody knows them, even if you haven't listened to their music.
Mm-hmm.
And when you think about who's behind all these really popular artists, it's always teenage girls.
Mm-hmm.
And a majority of their fan bases are teenage girls. And they're made fun of for that. You know, like, they're like, oh, you, like, you got so basic.
Yeah.
And then it's just, like, whatever teenage girls seem to really get into, people make fun of them for that.
Yeah.
And so I'm really tired of that kind of culture, and I think it really shows still how much, like, misogyny there is when a teenage guy is interested in sports. That's just natural. When a teenage guy is interested in poetry, he's different and interesting.
Yeah.
But when a teenage girl is interested in sports, that's weird. She's only doing it because guys like it, and she wants guys to like her. When a teenage girl's interested in poetry, that's cheesy, and she's such a, you know,
cliche.
Such a cliche. She's trying to be quirky or whatever.
It's not going to last that long.
Yeah. And so, exactly. And I think it shouldn't be a source of shame if it doesn't last that long. You know, like, maybe you liked poetry for a short time, and then you were like, no, this isn't my thing anymore. Like, there's no shame in just having different interests, you know?
Yeah.
That's what bugs me a lot. It's like, why would you shame someone for that?
Right? Yeah. I think that there should be definitely a lot more understanding and a lot more, like, encouragement for other people, you know, like, you do you, I'm happy for you, that kind of thing. So, what do you think is the easiest for you to write about and the most difficult for you to write about?
I did a lot of political writing. Once upon a time, I kind of disappeared from Young Writers Project for a while. If you slightly keep up with my writing, there's a very, very large gap between the last time I published a poem and then Honey, which was my, like, kind of, you know, I came back and I was like, oh, I'm going to try writing again.
Mm-hmm.
And I think I just kind of, you know, as a person of color, as an immigrant, it's really easy to be angry about things, and it's really easy to just pour yourself into that anger and pour yourself into fighting whatever you feel like is wrong. There's a lot of things wrong, and so that becomes exhausting. And while it's easy to write about, it becomes exhausting, and then at some point you just don't want to do it anymore. And so I think I struggled with that a lot, is that a lot of my writing was based on political stuff a lot. And so I was exhausted and I didn't want to do that anymore. And I wanted to kind of find something that I actually enjoyed, you know, like I enjoy activism and I love doing it, but it is exhausting. And there's a real chance of, like, burning out and just not being able to anymore. And so I wanted to find a place in poetry where I could exist, where I can write political poems if I want to, but that doesn't become my thing, you know, where that doesn't become everything I do.
Yeah. Yeah, I think that I'm definitely still finding that, like, balance of, you know, not pretty poems, but, you know, there's nothing controversial about it, you know?
Mm-hmm.
Like, you can read it and just get a happy feeling or just you know, connect through it in some way. And then there's another part of me that wants to write more controversial poems, like, you know, talking about my opinions on things that might make other people feel like, wow, she has no right to talk about that or something. So just finding the balance between, like, what I feel is, like, a good thing to write about and what I feel like is a not-so-good thing to write about.
You know, it's okay to write political poetry. Mm-hmm. It's okay, like, if that's what you like to do, do it. But to be good at something, you need balance.
Yeah.
Or to be a well-rounded artist, there's a reason people go to art school.
Yeah.
Even if they end up just going to digital art, digital artists still take paint classes.
Mm-hmm.
Even if that's not something that they love, if they still have, there are valuable lessons to be learned there. And I think even if you don't love classical poetry, even if you don't love writing about nature and life and whatever, and you want to write political poetry, well, that's fine. It's just that, like, to be really a well-rounded writer, you have to at least try. Like, try and write that stuff and try so that you gain a better understanding of what it is you're trying to do.
Yeah, I completely agree. And I agree about that with, like, you know, life in general. Because if you know, you're set on becoming a writer, but maybe see what other options there are. Like, do you like acting? Maybe that's something that you're interested in.
Exactly.
Maybe that's something that you want to spend more time working on.
I think there's so much pressure for teenagers, especially as you get closer to college, to know what you want to do.
Yeah, know exactly who you want to be. And it's like, well, how can I know what I want to be when I'm, you know, 17 and all I do is just write about things that have happened in the past, you know? Yeah, I haven't really been trained to think about the future.
And, like, no, I would rather switch my major 7 times in college than get stuck in something that I don't like for the rest of my life, because
I
never learned to, like, actually explore stuff. And that seems very unreasonable to me, because you're just setting people up for disappointment.
I know. And it's like, teenagers are the most fickle people. Like, we change our minds all the time. We shouldn't be given this, like, ultimatum, like, decide what you want to do right now.
Yeah, definitely. I think that's a really big problem when, you know, and luckily, like, my parents had to decide when they were in, because of Iran's kind of school system, they had to decide when they were in, like, sophomore year what they wanted to do for basically the rest of their high school careers, the rest of their lives. And so, luckily, here it's a lot easier, especially if you, like, plan on going to a college or something like that, but it's still very set that, like, you know, like, what do you want to be when you grow up? What do you want to do? And I don't know.
And, like, people ask you that when you're, like, in kindergarten.
Yeah.
You know, there's, like, so much, like, you need to know what you want to be. But isn't that something that's always changing? Like, we're always changing who we are. We're always growing and, like, evolving as individuals. So we shouldn't have to put ourselves into our own boxes, you know?
Mm-hmm.
That's the important message of the podcast episode. Well, thank you so much for being in this episode. I've had a lot
thank
of fun talking to you.
Thank you so much for inviting me.
This has been episode 13 of Line Break. I hope you enjoyed, and stay tuned for episode 14. Bye!